I didn't have any of the gear. Rich told me what to buy. I bought all the gear and started to train in Malibu and like felt semi-ridiculous. Now I love wearing my gear. I feel like we're early in on this, what's going to be climate change chic. We're just going to like, anytime you go to the store, you're going to have to get in your swim run gear at some point in like 30 years.
Welcome to the Low Tide Boys, a swim run podcast. I am Chip.
And I'm Chris, and this is episode 28 of the show. On the show this week, we have the award-winning journalist Adam Skolnick. He's my favorite journalist, and not just because he quoted Chipper in his New York Times piece about Atala Catalina in March, but he's a super interesting guy. Got to meet him and chat with him in Catalina, and we kept in touch. So really stoked that he's on the show, and we'll have a little bit more on that later.
Yes, so on to training. We just hit four consecutive swim days in a row. My shoulders today, I was a little, I'm a little smoky, which is good. But Chris and I, we had a pretty good little training session this morning. We, you know, our background is a lot of zone two endurance, you know, long ultra marathons, things like that. And we haven't sharpened up the gears lately. So I think that's where we're kind of taking this next training block. I guess we'll call it that.
Yeah,
but
working
some speed in and on both land and water.
Land and sea.
I almost said land and sea, but land and pool. And sea.
I guess technically
the sea. So that segues us perfectly
into
our first shout out. We had a nice little swim run practice for ourselves on Saturday down in San Francisco at Aquatic Park.
Yep.
And do we bring along?
Well, so here's the thing. So a good buddy of mine, we've been training on and off.
We've known him forever.
Yeah, his name's Ray. He's a dad like us. We were part of the same triathlon club. We're still part of the same triathlon club. And he was wondering what we were doing on Saturday. So I was just like, hey, we're doing this swim run. I got a suit for you. Show up, bring some shoes and whatever else you bring for open water.
Yep.
And he showed up.
Yeah, he showed up and he got the suit. It fit him well.
Yeah, fit him better than it fit me.
And we didn't go crazy long. We did about an hour and 20 minutes or something, but a couple swims, a couple runs.
Well, this was really recon for what we're going to do next weekend, which if you haven't listened to our Atala Engadin course preview, Nicholas Ramirez just lays down like a really spicy workout right at the end. I think at about minute 48, if you need a refresher on that.
Wow.
48 and a half, I think. Just off the top of my head, you know.
Just guessing.
So it's a 3-hour, basically, hill repeat swim run extravaganza. So we're doing that next Saturday. And so we were sort of previewing, we're going to do an aquatic park, and we were thinking we're going to do Hyde Street, which if you're familiar with the city or not familiar with the city, is like the cable car route, pretty steep hill, which I think will be perfect for Nicholas's instructions for what we're supposed to do. But so that's next weekend. So going back to Ray, we're giving him a shout out for just showing up and doing his first swim run.
Yeah, he got a little mention on our Instagram account. Obviously check that out if you want some LOL memes and then silly stories on the Low Tide Boys with a Z. But Ray had a great time, and then I think Chris told me he already caught the bug.
Yeah, he was telling me what I think of the Hoka Evo Jaws, and I was like, dude, you should check out our Shoedown episode.
I like how we just have, dude, just check this episode.
I can
episode.
Just plug
check
everything
this
in the show.
Yeah, it's perfect. So Ray's on. Ray's into it.
Yeah.
We'll be sure to have him out for more swim runs, but welcome to the club. Now, speaking of the club, you want to make sure you're joining the Low Tide Boys Strava Club, where all your activities are
valued, supported, and encouraged.
And kudosed.
Yeah, kudos.
Hella kudos in that club. But we want to award the new second week of the Feats of Endurance. So we got a nice email from Nancy up in Buffalo, New York, pretty much the opposite of where we are here in the Bay Area, California. She's like the furthest away she could be from us.
Pretty much.
Over there in Buffalo, New York. But she sent us a nice email, and she and her swim run partner, Denise, who are doing the Odyssey race in Michigan in August, had a pretty nice little 3-hour swim run for themselves. And so that was cool to see that on Strava. So congrats, Nancy and Denise.
There will be a bumper sticker coming your way and as soon as we finish them.
we did a little sneak peek on the Strava Club. So if you want to check that out, we dropped it there and you can see. If you put it on your car, God bless you.
God bless you.
Just so amazing. So amazing.
So let's just go right into updates because we have a super packed show. We just really only have one. Our latest column in Triathlete Magazine, What's the Deal with the Tether, is out now. So you can go to our website, lowtideboys.com, to find it. It'll take you directly to the Triathlete. We're only in the online edition, so don't worry about anything going to the newsstands just yet. But yeah, if you like the article, it really helps us out if you give it a little thumbs up on their website. But yeah, check it out.
Yeah, share it with all your friends. And we're slowly trying to get more people over from the triathlon community and welcome them to the community that is the swim run here. Since the Shoedown episode, Chris and I have inquired the Vivo Barefoot ESC Tempest.
Yes.
Swim run specific shoes from Vivo Barefoot, the natural minimalist running barefoot company.
Yeah, and you can check out our episode with Asher Clark about Vivo Barefoot.
Just cross promotion. I think it's really cool. It's like a cool full circle thing. So we'll have a full kind of review for you in the future, but we wanted to drop some initial impressions on you here.
Yep.
And it is really cool to go back and listen to that Asher Clark because he describes how meticulous they were about the R&D and the development of this shoe. And it really kind of pays off. And it's kind of cool to see it in the flesh, if you will.
I agree. I think hearing his description of it and then actually being able to hold it and check it out, it's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool shoe. I think going straight into initial impressions, drainage,
not an issue.
Yeah, like we mentioned in the Shoedown episode, it's definitely a non-issue. It's a non-factor in the water. It's great. Coming out of the water, we've run it on trails and pavement and held up great.
And cable car tracks.
Cable car tracks. I mean, As everyone should know, you can't just buy these and run 20 miles in them. You really have to get your feet kind of ready to be running in these minimal shoes. Mm-hmm. I mean, speaking for myself, my quads, it's the longest we ran in them, I think, on road on Saturday, I think was like 4 or 5 miles or something.
Yeah.
And yeah, my calves were pretty
screaming,
pretty smoked from using
them. In all fairness, I don't think we followed their recommended protocol for easing into these shoes. We've worn them we did 2 or 3 swim runs in them. So we have a couple hours in these shoes, and they fit true to size. If you are already using minimalist shoes and barefoot-type shoes, these, to me, seem like a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Because they're just so perfect for swim run. They have a nice little sock booty thing that does really well about keeping the gravel and other shit that can fall into your shoe out of your shoe. Like Chris mentioned, they drain. I mean, it's not even an issue. When you're swimming with them on, it feels like you're wearing nothing. So that part is pretty cool. So if you feel like you're somebody with, you don't like big shoes and you feel like they're sinking, they're making you sink, this might be a way to look. But those are just kind of our first impressions.
Yeah, I mean, I think I think it's a great shoe. Thank you, Vivo Barefoot and Asher and everybody over there for sending us a couple pair. They sent us a black one and the orange one, and Chipper and I decided to just take one of each.
So we have two different shoes.
Yeah.
And congratulations to our two winners who won two pair, or the swim run pair that won.
Yeah,
the two shoes. So those have been posted on our Instagram stories.
Yeah, I think they've been delivered. So that's
awesome. Yeah, they have been delivered. So that's cool. So now for Adam.
So Adam Skolnick is an award-winning independent journalist and author covering adventure sports, environmental issues, travel, human rights for the New York Times, Outside, Playboy, and Lonely Planet. He's basically traveled the world. He's contributed to 35 Lonely Planet travel guides and is the author of One Breath, Free Driving, Death, and the Quest to Shatter Human Limits, a book that I read and really enjoyed. If that wasn't enough, he was also the ghostwriter and narrator for David Goggins' hit memoir and audiobook, Can't Hurt Me, Master Your Mind and Defy the Odds. which has sold over 2 million copies and counting worldwide. So pretty awesome.
A lot of books.
But for us, most notably, he wrote a New York Times article in 2017 chronicling Rich Roll taking on the Atalau World Championship. And that, I think, was a pretty important article for, you know, in the story of swim run in the U.S.
Totally.
Yeah. And then he wrote an even more important article.
For us.
For us in March 2020, where he quoted Chipper in the last sentence, which is pretty awesome.
Giving the Low Tide Boys a nice shout out. But yeah, like Chris said earlier, we pretty much ended up bumping into him every single day,
times,
the whole weekend, and it became this whole funny thing. But Adam also did the experience race on Saturday in Catalina and had a great time,
which he talks about in the interview. It's pretty cool. I mean, we had a great chat with him.
Super fascinating guy.
I mean, a lot of the questions were like, tell us about your life, because it sounds awesome. And get to hear his swim run origin story, which is pretty cool. So I think you'll enjoy this one. We definitely enjoyed chatting with him. And
then enjoy.
With us today, we have Adam Skolnick. He's an independent freelance journalist, an author, and also a swim runner. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Hey, thanks, man. Good to be here.
So we met at Catalina, and we chatted you up a bit, and we found out that you're a reporter. You kind of made us famous a little bit by featuring us at the tail end of a article that you wrote.
Brilliant piece of work.
You're by far my favorite journalist at this point. You've also written some books, but we are kind of interested. We're going to talk about swim run, but we kind of wanted to take it all the way back because I just have a lot of curiosity and sort of tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, how did you become a journalist? And you've done a lot of international work. Like, what's that like?
Yeah. Well, thank you. It's good to know that all I have to do to become your favorite journalist is quote you. That's good.
Or easily pleased.
I started a long time ago. So like I worked in nonprofits out of college in the 90s and my environmental nonprofits. And at some point I was working, you know, planting trees with kids at schools, which was a great job. It was fulfilling in a lot of levels, but it wasn't like I was passionate about the environment, still am, but it wasn't like fulfilling my creative side. And so I took a hiatus, just like a leave of absence, I guess. It was really only about a month, to go to Africa to climb Mount Kilimanjaro with my dad and my brother. And I went a little early and kind of traveled around. And at some point I was like reading a magazine, a travel magazine. And I read a story. I went to Zanzibar before climbing Kilimanjaro. And, kind of was guided there by this Islands Magazine article. And I remember finishing reading that article on the beach in Zanzibar and thinking, well, who the fuck is this guy? And why does he get to do this for a living? and so at that point, it kind of like was this idea that I wanted to try to write my way around the world. I at that time I was just journaling and writing for myself and, but like kind of too afraid to share it with people, even though I felt like I had the ability. I just never like took any classes. I never really tried to do it. And so I thought, you know, give it a shot. So I came back and I live in Los Angeles. I lived in Los Angeles then. I still live in Los Angeles. So I ended up walking Wilshire, Sunset, and Santa Monica Boulevards from beginning to end and wrote a story about it. And that kind of was the beginning of me trying to write for a living. Mm-hmm. And I didn't sell that story, but it got me my first assignment. And then little by little, I built it up. And over the years, I started focusing a lot on wellness and yoga and then got into the travel space finally based on that. Right after the Bali bombing, I went to Indonesia and kind of bundled some assignments and did some work there. And at the time, Bali was kind of going through a slump and Indonesia was going through a slump, it was on the It was on the U.S. kind of watch list, like State Department warning, don't go to Indo. And so because I was going there, I was one of the few American journalists with some experience there kind of right away, just having spent like 6 months there. And that kind of got me into in the door at Lonely Planet and started doing those Lonely Planet guidebooks. And just kind of over time, you know, it's like you take one outlet, you try to parlay that into the next, and
you're laying bricks.
You try to grow it. Yeah. And so it's been kind of like hacking my way in from the outside. I mean, that all sounds very easy, but there were a lot of closed doors. There was a whole eviction notice period.
Wow.
A lot of grinding.
So,
you know,
a lot of grinding. Yeah.
I still can't get an interview at like a mainstream newspaper to save my life, like to get a job. So it's like, I'm still kind of an outsider, but I've now made it work for me kind of doing underreported stories. And definitely at this point, I'm in a place where I've built something that seems to be working. So
no, I mean, I feel like your voice is really interesting. I read your book, One Breath. Which I actually really, really liked. It kind of reminded me a lot of Barbarian Days, except for the fact that, I mean, I felt like while I was reading the book, I was just like holding my breath the whole time. So I almost feel like there kind of should have been this disclosure.
Just because the title was that?
Well, no. So the book is about free diving.
Yep.
Which was one of my favorite movies growing up was The Big Blue, which was about free. It's like a Luc Besson, kind of like an artsy, weird
movie. You lost
me
already.
But so I was like, oh, I since you're my favorite journalist, I was like, oh, he wrote a book, let me read it. And yeah, I thought it was awesome. So how did you
Thank you.
Sort of start doing that project?
So that project happened in 2013, I moved to Kauai to report a story on genetically modified corn production. So basically what had happened in Kauai right before that. So over the years, I've covered travel and health, and I've tried to do some human rights stories whenever I could. And so I was in Kauai in 2012 to do a Lonely Planet travel guide. And while I was there, I saw there was this big debate locally about genetically modified corn, because all the sugarcane fields had been, which were, you know, owned by big companies, family businesses that had been around for generations. The sugarcane business had died, and they'd been replaced with these long-term leases to Dow Chemical, DuPont, Bayer, those kinds of people. And they were in Monsanto and Oahu, but in Kauai, it was mostly, you know, DuPont, Pioneer, and Dow, and some others. And they turned these sugarcane fields into genetically modified corn fields for seed corn. And some of them were experimental fields. And so it had become a big debate because, you know, they're spraying glyphosate all across the fields. And so it was kind of like this, I was there and I'm like, nobody's really reporting on this nationally. And I feel like it should be reported on. And I thought maybe there were reports of rumored cancer clusters and a lawsuit brewing, and it felt like an Aaron Brockovich type thing. So I had been going through some personal stuff at that time, and I decided that I was just going to move to Kauai to tell the story, because it's not, you know, Hawaii is not one of those places where you could just parachute in and get the story very easily. So I decided just to move, because I loved Kauai anyway.
Wow.
And so I moved to the west side of Kauai and researched it over the course of several months. And a photographer friend of mine, Leah Barrett, who's a very gifted underwater photographer who I knew through friends in the scuba world, came out to shoot that story. And then we also did an adventure sports story while we were there, for, you know, bundling stories like I've always done. Mm-hmm. And she came out and shot that. And she had just come from the free diving competition in Roatan. And while she was there, she took some of the best free divers in the world to this shark conservation area. And they did some kind of interesting kind of abstract art underwater photos, like where they're sitting and like riding bikes underwater with big sharks like swirling around them. So they did some really cool stuff, and her photos had gone viral. And so she arrived in Kauai straight from all that, where CNN had featured her work and all of that. And she was saying, you know, we should be covering free diving, because free diving, now it's becoming bigger and bigger. At that time, it was still kind of like just kind of coming into view, I guess. It's still pretty niche, but it's a lot more mainstream than it used to be. And so at that time, she's like, we should go and we should cover these great athletes doing this, you know, diving to 100 meters on one breath. And she told me about some of the best people who were doing it. And so just so happened that when I sold the story we did for on Kauai, ended up in Ceylon. And about a week or two after the story ran, one of my best sources on the island told me the New York Times had just flown somebody in. And so which had happened before with stories I've done, you know, like it's just something that happens when you do stories for smaller publications and they're interesting stories. Sometimes the bigger fish see it and they want to do it their way. And which is great. I mean, that's just the way journalism works. So I heard that. And so I reached out. I said, if you don't mind sending me his email, I'd love to offer my assistance. So I just basically said, I'm so glad you're here. This story needs to be told in a much bigger way. And I know it's hard to parachute into Hawaii, especially the west side of Hawaii, very local kind of place and not trusting of outsiders. Or mainland kind of press. And so I said that I have some people that maybe you can talk to that I didn't quote. And I did, he was appreciative. I don't think he even really needed my sources at that point. I mean, I think he talked to a couple of them, didn't quote them, but he was just appreciative that I made that gesture. Mm-hmm. And so I was pitching this freediving story around and nobody seemed to want it. And so kind of like a few weeks before the competition where it seemed like I hadn't sold it, I just messaged this guy and I said, hey, do you know anybody at the paper that might be interested in this? And he sent me to the editor at the time at the sports desk, and the guy bought it. And, you know, 2-3 weeks later, I was in Bahamas. And then a week after that, the best American at that time in the history of the sport, a guy who had just kind of discovered the sport and within a year had gotten to 100 meters, which is kind of unprecedented at the time. And he was an up and comer. He died, and he became the first in the history of the sport to die at a competition diving along a line. And he died right in front of us, and we were there. And so what was supposed to be kind of this niche sports story to run, you know, midweek during the football season, whenever they had time, kind of became a breaking news story for a couple of days and ended up just going viral all over the world. People were, rerunning it or printing it, and it just became a big story. And so as soon as I got back from that competition, all that had happened, I got in touch with the family because my focus was really on what was happening on site there. Mm-hmm. And in the follow-up story we ran, someone had talked to his father, but nobody had really gotten in touch with the family in a deep way. And so I reached out to his uncle and then his sister, and Nick Mavoli was the diver, and got to know a little bit more about him personally and just saw that there was this kind of underwater into the wild story there.
Yeah.
Cause he really was like a Chris McCandless type character. He was a beautiful guy. I had a really great interaction with him that week and really liked him and just saw something there that was a story to tell. And so I put together a book proposal, which is how most nonfiction books are sold, and was able to find a publisher that was interested and wrote the book the following year.
That's awesome.
That's quite a story. Do you have that on Kindle or do you have an actual book?
Old school.
Okay, can I borrow that?
Yeah, sure. No, it's a really
interesting story. That's on Kindle. So the book came out in 2016. He died in November 2013, and then for the freediving season of 2014, I basically tagged along with the best divers in the sport, and then I spent a lot of time with his close friends and family. And the book is really a profile of Nick and how he got, you know, it starts with his death and that competition in 2013. And then it goes back into his life story. And then it also flashes forward at points while the sport is trying to come to grips with this death. Because basically they thought, the best divers in the sport at that time thought it was legitimately thought it was safer than scuba diving, even though it seems crazy to the layman that people who dive to 100 meters on one breath and hold their breath for 4+ minutes or, you know, on a dive think that's safer than scuba diving. But they did, because they hadn't had a fatality. They'd had black blackouts, but that wasn't considered dangerous enough. Everyone always came back.
Yeah, or those lung squeezes where it's like you'd come up and then you just start coughing blood and it's like,
oh,
right,
or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like no problem.
So when the sport first started pushing limits and going deeper and deeper, lung squeezes were taken very, very seriously. But over the years, as more people got into it, they just started to think that they weren't a big problem. And so what Nick's death showed us is that lung squeezes, if they happen over and over again, actually are a big problem, because that's how, you know, one reason he died. It wasn't the only reason. So, you know, it's both an examination of this interesting, Christopher McCandless type story. You know, who's the Greek, the Greek parable where the guy flies too close to the sun, Icarus, like an Icarus underwater story, but also an examination of what happened, you know, physiologically. And then also a profile of the greatest people who are still out there doing it, and the battle for supremacy within the sport. So it's a lot going on, but that book came out in 2016. And that was the first nonfiction book.
Awesome. And I was going to say, you have a lot of irons in the fire. You know, you're writing for many publications, obviously New York Times.
Playboy.
I only read it for Adam's articles. That's the only reason I'm subscribed. And Outside Magazine and several other publications. And then also a couple books. You know, was this sort of, did that kind of got your beak wet a little bit, so to speak, on the book thing? And that's kind of what led to the book that you wrote with David Goggins, and the audiobook that you actually did all the voiceover. That actually was a really cool way how you did the audiobook. It was kind of like a podcast almost, where you would read an excerpt and then you and David would sort of talk sort of about those last chapters or whatever, and then kind of proceed. It was a really interesting take on audiobooks that I think is probably going to change how that type of biography type audiobook is made.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So the One Breath, definitely the first book, kind of put me in a position to be considered for David's memoir. So, you know, I guess your listeners probably know who David Goggins is, a monster endurance athlete with an incredible backstory of his own. And it just so happened through my literary agent, Bird Level, was kind of basically representing David at the time, and he wanted to do a book, and asked if I'd be interested. And I knew David from some of his podcasts. I mean, he's like the greatest podcast guest ever, basically.
Oh, yeah.
I remember listening to him on Rich Roll, and how like his mindset and the things he accomplished and you know, just changed my own perception of what I could do. And so I knew he could help a lot of people, and it just came to me at the right time in my life. You know, like it was, I even though the book came out in 2016, I was not financially responsible, and the book didn't sell as much as I'd hoped. And so like, I basically had the energy it took to get the book out and promote it. And then I just wasn't on top of my game, and I slipped financially, and I really needed something when David showed up, and it was the right place, right time. And we worked on the proposal and went to get a deal, and he got a deal, of course, but he at the last minute decided against accepting the deal and to publish it himself, which was a real risk on his part. He could have, you know, it could have cost him a lot of money.
Yeah.
But he believed in it, and he basically said, he asked if I want to stay involved, and of course I was never going to leave. And then as we were working on it over the course of several months, frequently I would write, and we would go over pieces together, and sometimes I would reread stuff back to him, and he just liked how I narrated. And so when it came time to do the audiobook, it was his idea to have me narrate it.
That's awesome.
I had thought it would be cool to interview him between chapters anyway, because just to give the audio something extra, and because he's so good in an interview forum, you know, off the cuff, there's just nobody better. And so then we just talked about that, and then he's like, "Why don't you read it?" And at first, I thought that his readers wouldn't like that as well. And I basically said no at first, because I'm an idiot, and And he said, "Hey man, I'll read it, but I'd really like you to do it." And I just accepted it. So I thought it was a really generous offer, and you know, not many people do that. You know, a lot of books out there, almost any famous or relatively famous, or even people who are not writers that have a memoir out there, very few of them are not ghostwritten. Most of them are. And it's, you can count on one hand how many people put their ghostwriter in a position to have personal success within that project. And you know, David's just a very unique person. So very grateful.
So I have a question about that. Yeah. I mean, David, yeah. Like whenever I want to feel like I'm just like a little bitch, I'll just like,
yes,
he makes it happen for you.
I'm like, oh man, I need to get off of my bullshit.
I only ran 15 miles this morning and David ran 22, but his knee's blown out. So, yeah, he's got so many badass points. It's, no one can touch him.
So I have a couple of questions. One is just from like a technical perspective, you see all these books where it's like, Charles Barkley with, you know, Michael Wilbon or something like that. Why in this case were you not on the title as like a co-author or like in a assistant?
It's just industry has gone a different way. Like if you look at the Phil Knight's book, he had a very J.D. Moringer, I think, who has had a bestseller under his own steam, was the ghostwriter, but he's not on the book. It's just the way the industry has gone. Mm-hmm. I can't really explain it. Some people still include the co-writer in it, and some people really want that credit. For me, it's like, it doesn't really matter. It's the same role. It doesn't change the job.
Sure.
And in this case, I was happy to be of service, to be honest with you.
So when you meet someone like David, that, who's like larger than life super intense, what was it like just like hearing these crazy stories? Like, you know, you're going to help write these and he's telling you these sort of insane stories. Like, how do you even take notes on that?
There's
like,
probably 50. I mean, there was probably 200 stories he didn't even tell. Just tell his Rolodex is so deep.
That's insane.
With all these crazy.
You know what's funny is that like when I was first starting to work with him, I remember having a conversation with someone and I'm like, how do I know that everything he's saying is actually what happened? You know, like it's so hard to believe because it's so crazy.
Yeah.
But over the course of our research, he brought in everybody who was a witness to the events, things that couldn't be witnessed. There was documents, proof. There was nothing in there that couldn't be documented or wasn't fact checked. And yes, there are so many more stories that could have been included that we actually had to pare it down. You know what I compare it to? It's like a great one-man show on Broadway that I got to see every day for several weeks.
Yeah.
Awesome. That where I would talk with him. And he would, he feels the story. I mean, to work with David versus, and I've kind of put my toe in the water with some other people since then. And there's just, you know, he is a master storyteller. He'd been telling his story well before we heard him on podcasts. He was doing it for the Navy as a recruiter.
Right.
And that's in the book where he goes around and starts telling his story about where he came from, his abusive childhood, how his obesity, how he rose above that, became a SEAL anyway. And he was already running ultras. He was already doing that. He was already a great storyteller. So he came to me a fully realized master storyteller with a complete crystallized view of how to tell his own story. And my job was then to be able to put that on a page in a compelling way. And so, you know, it was perfect creative kind of symbiosis. And so I got to, at first, sometimes I would take notes and sometimes I would record it and we'd transcribe it. But often like after the first, you know, I'd say third of the research, I stopped recording it on audio and just took notes. And we would have like marathon sessions that go like 3 or 4 hours at a time. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes we'd interview people from his life together. We were able to kind of get more of his story out just from my interviewing him over and over and over again. And then he went over everything with a fine tooth comb, draft after draft after draft, and really got it to where he wanted to get it. So it was a privilege. And then to see people loving it,
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's very fulfilling.
I mean, one thing I really appreciate about that book, and I was actually going to, I'm a big, like, I like owning, having a book and reading it and supporting, you know, authors and all that stuff. But everyone kept telling me you should just listen to the audiobook because it's so unique. Yeah.
I feel like I told you that.
Yeah.
He can't
hurt me.
Or can't hurt me.
But one thing I really appreciate about the book was you kept waiting for the next story to be the major success, like the breakthrough.
Yeah.
And it just kind of amazing how almost at every step he just kept
tragedy.
Just like, oh, the pull-up challenge. Oh, fuck that up. Oh, man, like everything just kept getting, yet he still pushed forward. It's just like so amazing.
Yeah.
If you haven't read that book, highly, highly recommend it. But let's get this a little bit, at least in the swim run universe here.
Yeah. Although David is swim run universe because he's he's an Ironman, an Ultraman. Yeah. I mean, he's done all that.
That's true.
Yeah.
We can get David and Rich to do a swim run.
That would be interesting. It's like, would there actually be any?
You never know.
Yeah. Well, I think Chipper's right. We should bring this back. This, you know, this isn't the Low Tide Boys literary podcast. This is a swim run podcast.
No.
So
yes.
So let's talk a little bit about how you got the story
of the Ultalo in 2017 with Rich, Roll, and the piece was about Rich Roll and his partner at the Chris Hoth, actually, who's a Bay Area multi-sport coach here. And that was in 2017, and that was probably a vast majority of people's in the United States their first intro into swim.
Is that right?
And that put swim run on the map in a big, big way in the United States. I remember reading that, and I knew about swim run already, but I was like, "Whoa, this is huge for the sport." So, like, let's hear that story.
Yeah, I didn't realize that it had that impact, but that story was in 2017. It was actually it kind of dovetails because it was like right when I was trying to, you know, scrambling for work and right before David's book came to me. So it was that same period where I was like, oh shit, I better fucking scramble. And so I was like looking around for stories to tell. And since the first competition, Vertical Blue, where Nick died, I had now this opportunity to tell these adventure sports stories for the New York Times when they came to me. And so I had done a number of open water swim stories. And this was just an extension of that. And so I'd connected with Rich. Rich had told me he was going to do this really interesting race, which I had personally never heard of yet. And I brought the story kind of as a profile of both the race and Rich to the sports desk, and they went for it. And so it was really something I reported from the desk. I didn't get to go to Sweden, but I spent time with Rich. And then I talked with Michael Lemmel and some other folks in the swim run universe, and just painted the picture, and then stayed in touch with, you know, I talked with Chris as well, and then I stayed in touch with both those guys for after the race. I remember talking to them right after the race, and was able to track their progress and what happened at the race. It's been a while since I did that story, so I don't exactly remember the blow by blow of the research of it, but yeah, the story came out, and that was it. And I always remember loving swim. You know, I loved the idea of swim run. At the time, I had this horrible foot injury that I couldn't shake, and so I wasn't able to trail run. But I'm an open water swimmer and free dive the pinnacles off Point Doom in Malibu, and love open water swimming. And I've also loved trail running historically over time. And so I thought, you know, I want to get my foot better. I want to do this swim run. And so fast forward to this year, I was finally able to kind of get my foot back in shape in 2019. And I was able to start running again, first on a treadmill and finally on the trails. And Rich told me that the Swedes were coming to Catalina and decided to try to do the experience. And so I signed up for the experience. And then just coincidentally, my editor at the New York Times said, hey, would you want to go to Catalina and do this story? They're here. And I'm like, it's funny that you should say that. I'm already going. Yeah. So it became the second story.
It's like, yeah, thanks for paying for my hotel now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
can I submit a expense report for my hotel?
Exactly.
All the ceviche I've been eating.
It paid for the trip.
That's awesome.
Awesome. And that is kind of where we intersected with you.
Yeah.
And it was just such a, I mean, the whole weekend there, starting on Thursday through to Sunday, it was honestly just sort of magical. I mean, for Chris and I, we had just started the show literally in January, and here we are in sometime in February, late February. We have maybe 8 episodes in the hopper. Seven. And we're out here and we're walking around and people are like, "Low Tide Boys, how's it going?" And we're like, "This is insane. This is crazy."
And stuff.
Yeah, they're showing pull buoy flashing us and all this stuff. So I thought we hit it off with you pretty well. And there was a pretty funny story that I don't think we've actually shared on the show yet. But one of the legs on the, you know, we did the World Series course on Sunday, yeah. And Adam had raced on Saturday. You did the experience solo,
yes.
Correct? How was your experience actually? Let's hear it.
I loved it. So, I mean, it's I was starting kind of from a place, I was still mostly doing kind of these high intensity interval training in the gym and then swimming mm-hmm. in the ocean. I wasn't doing a lot of road or trail running in for the year previous. And so I had to get on the street and start running. And so I was thinking between the experience and then the sprint. And then I just didn't think I had it in me to do the sprint. So I decided to start with the experience. And I'm glad I did. And I had about six weeks to train. I didn't have any of the gear. Rich told me what to buy. I bought all the gear and started to train in Malibu and like felt semi-ridiculous. Now I love wearing my gear. I feel like we're early in on this, what's going to be climate change chic. We're just going to, like, anytime you go to the store, you're going to have to get in your swim run gear at some point in like 30 years.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially where you're totally. Living.
Yes. Yes. So I think that's my new thing. It's a like climate change chic. So now I love the gear, but it took me a while to get comfortable with it. But on the race day, I had just a good time, man. It was such a pleasure. And, my whole goal was not come in last. That was it. I just don't come in last. Every time I enter a race, I just don't want to come in last. That's always been my goal. So I was able to do pretty well because I was in the lowest division and I have a lot of experience swimming in the open water, especially in that water at that temperature. And so I think that I had an unfair advantage because, you know, I was not hesitant at all in the swims. And then so any ground I lost on the trail, I made up in the water and had a good time.
Awesome. And I remember you sharing a picture and you just had a big old grin on your face. And
I did, but I also tripped going, you know, that like that little step up before you go through the, you know, from the beach before you go to the final.
Yeah, like the last 100 meters.
Yeah, the sandbag steps. I tripped and like had this vicious cramp, hamstring cramp, and I could barely move getting down the last straightaway. And it was pretty funny.
Yeah, and that's the type of thing, you know, when you like stub your toe walking into that important meeting and you just gotta like pretend like you're not in excruciating pain.
It didn't happen, yeah.
Yes, yes.
And Adam, as Adam's, wandering around the course on Sunday on the World Series day, Chris and I are
well we saw you in the morning before the race.
Oh, that's
and that's
right.
Where we're like, oh, how'd it go, like da 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 da. And then it was leg, it was the second,
the, it was the big
the,
run.
the third run that was sort of the super big 10K
up a hill.
Yep. As hell.
We were cursing Motz and Michael, the race directors from Otolo, about all the hills and the lack of buffalo and bison that we saw or didn't see. But then we were hiking up, and I had a little niggle in my upper hip, so we were hiking it out a little bit, and we're going and probably a little bit on the bonky side, and I look up, and here comes Adam from down the hill from the aid station walking down, and I'm like, I think that's that Adam guy that we met this week. And sure enough, we get up there and you come up and you have your recorder. You're like, "Low Tide Boys, how's it going?" And I'm like, I just put a smile on my face and I'm like, "This is going great." You know? But it was just such like,
we're definitely getting our money's worth. Yeah, it was honestly funny. it was a big lift to see you at that point because we're almost kind of at the peak. and then we're descending down, kind of getting towards the second half of the race, which was going to be really swim heavy.
But you caught us—you caught us in the worst. At least for myself, I was not like in the best place mentally to be talking.
You guys, I couldn't tell at all.
I guess we have a good poker face then.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely have a good poker face. I mean, yeah, but honestly, for me, it was a big lift. It was like, oh, it was awesome. He was up here, just like media, you know, and then just like drop down the other side of the island was.
But yeah, cool. But you know, the reason that I think it works though, because you guys. You're having fun with it. So what's cool about Low Tide Boys is that you're not taking it too seriously, even though obviously to take on that World Series level of race course, you have to be serious. You know, you have to put your work in. You can't just like show up and do it. So there is a level of taking it very seriously, but just the way that you have a good time with it, it's almost better when you're like caught in those moments of like you have to fucking put a grin on. Because I remember you were suffering. I mean, I remember you guys were, you know, but of course you're going to be at the top of that hill. So no matter what, no matter how well the race is going, there's going to be some suffering.
Right, right. Well, you know, I mean, it's funny that you say it that way, because this is actually something, this is like our philosophy for the show, where, not to get, you know, too philosophical about it, it's like, yeah, it's the sport is super young in the U.S. We think it's great. We think it's amazing. It's perfect for triathletes. It's perfect for trail runners or open water swimmers.
People looking for an adventure.
Looking for an adventure, but you kind of can't be in this sort of type A hyper triathlete state where you're worried about shaving 5 watts of your, you know, or 5 grams so you can gain like a watt of speed or power or whatever. And for us, we're like, hey, no one knows about the sport. We're trying to grow it because we think it's great. But in that process, like, let's do it the way that we think makes the most sense, which is just like, hey, no one cares if you're first or last. There aren't age group awards. You want to go for it, have at it, Haas. But the whole point is to like be in nature and enjoy it and have fun. And that's sort of like the ethos that we keep putting out, like on purpose. Because, you know, if it's so young, why can't we grow the sport in an image that we think is the right image? And so far, the reaction to sort of that philosophy and that ethos, I mean, everyone loves it.
Yeah.
And it's not an act too. It's just who we are. It's just like we're just being normal.
Yeah, right.
We're just being ourselves. Yeah, I guess. Hopefully it comes across as genuine.
It does. And that's why I wanted to interview you at that moment, because I knew it would be funny. Because I mean, what are you going to do at that moment, especially if you're suffering, other than laugh at it? I mean, you're the one that put yourself there.
Yeah, it was. I did. Yeah,
absolutely.
Actually, what would have been really great if you had like a cooler with some ice cold Cokes or maybe like a beer or something that we could have slammed. Maybe next year.
Maybe next year. I don't know, man. I wouldn't take a beer mid course myself.
Not a beer. Probably needed a Coca Cola.
I wouldn't let you take a beer at that stage. But you know, I think, you know, one of the reasons that we're sort of in this post triathlete, post type A, you know, state of mind is because we're dads, right? And it's something like that really puts
stuff in
things
perspective,
like things like races, hobbies into perspective. And you're about to become a new dad. How do you feel about that?
I feel like now swim run for me is about staying in shape so I can chase the kid down, because you'd have to classify me as an old dad. I'm in, you know, my 40s and mid 40s. So to have a first time kid at that age, you know you're an old, you are hashtag old dad. And so I want to be able to, you know, give him what he needs and be available to him and have fun and stay healthy and fit. So really that's kind of my new motivation to do it. And so I feel great about it. It's very exciting. And obviously I'm making the most of being able to get out there now. You know, the baby is due in 2 months. So I'm aware that will change. Awesome. But I remember there was a great couple that I think they came in second in the World Series race. And they had had twins like a year before that, if I'm not mistaken. Like,
that's Greg and Bronwyn, the Boston Red Sox.
Well, I think that's a different couple.
Oh.
Because they have a daughter, Gwen, who's like 7.
These guys were European, weren't they? The other ones were? Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, they're European, and they just brought their twins, and they brought like grandma.
Yeah, but they had like literally, was, like, started training, and they would, you know, they would do a long run together with the baby stroller on the weekend. And they had a whole system, and I'm going to have to get in touch with them and figure that out, because like, that's a, they came in second of the that's mixed pretty, couples.
Yeah. Well, you know, as we interview more of like the top teams, yeah, we're starting to get a sense of what it really takes. And it takes a lot. So once you have like this crazy level of fitness and experience, these are just different types of humans.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you know, I'll tell you, everyone says that when you become a parent, it changes you. But I'm gonna tell you something that I wish someone would have told me, which is like, yeah, it does change you. But what no one tells you is kind of like how magical it is and how sort of instant it happens. Like the second you see this child. Yeah. You know, it could be born with scales and a tail, and you're going to be like, that's my little lizard. I love my lizard. But also, it's like, I think the other part of it is like your capacity to love. Like, all of a sudden, there's like a new total reservoir that didn't exist before, and it's filled to the brim towards this new human, right? And then you look at your wife, and there's another reservoir that's filled to the brim where it just like, it just shows up. And it's like, it's such an amazing thing. And I'm so happy for you, and I think it's going to be
awesome.
Thanks,
man. I appreciate that. That's great advice, and so I hope to continue to swim. You know, it's I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to all of it. I can't wait for my wife to be able to kind of get out there with me. She's a much better runner than me, and she swims in the open water with me as well. It's not her favorite sport, but we'd love to do one of these races together too.
Oh, so maybe Catalina 2021. If Chris and I will babysit, Civil War, American apocalypse. Yeah, I mean, we're coming with our whole tribe, so there'll be enough people to babysit the little.
All right. Well, you know, I am 100%. If it exists, if it goes on, and we can live our normal lives, and there is a Catalina event, I plan to be there. I plan to do the sprint, whether it's with April or solo. I plan to be there. So now I'm doing, you know, today, this morning I did, you know, a 6.5 mile swim run or something like that. Maybe
nice.
Just like, because I can just do it from my doorstep. And like I go out, run 3 miles, jump in the water, swim a mile or so, come back, run home. And that's basically what I do.
Love it.
You're in the Low Tide Boys Strava group. Or I've been taking a look, and I'm jealous of your proximity to open water.
Yeah, well, but aren't you guys at Marin? Do you guys not have that proximity in Marin?
We definitely have to get in the cars to get near anything. I mean, Chipper, he's always down to jump into any body of water, and I'm a little bit more like, you're gonna get Giardia, bro. But you know, so we have some beaches that we frequent. Our main spot is Aquatic Park in San Francisco, which is by Ghirardelli Square.
Yeah, I know it well. I know that well.
So, but we're expanding, and one of the things, you know, we'll just give you a little exclusive. One of the things we're thinking of doing for the show, just for content, is to kind of create like unofficial swim run courses. So like ask people like, hey, what lake are you swimming in? And, you know, there's tons of places that we want to explore sort of in Northern California, like Lake Berryessa, there's Lake Sonoma, there's all these places where you could potentially do a swim run, and just kind of like chart out potential courses and just give that content to people so they could.
Yeah. So, and then it'll be all kind of user generated. So if Adam, you're doing a bunch of stuff in Santa Monica, you can say, hey, here's my normal swim run course that I kind of do when I do a swim run workout. And we would have that on our site. And you would kind of do a little write-up about why you like it with the Strava links and stuff.
Oh, nice.
And then if anyone's traveling down there or is new to the sport, they can look. And there's also, you know, these built-in sort of courses
like a lonely, to bring it full circle, it's kind of like a lonely planet for swim runners on vacation.
I love it. I've been toying with this fantasy of like, you know, the through hiking thing, like through swim run. Like, wouldn't it be cool to do like Big Sur over the course of like a week? And do the entire Big Sur coast or 10 days or whatever, however long it would take. And
that would be,
you know, like some sort of like cool strip of coastline. You would need boat support. You would need a lot of help in Big Sur because the currents are so crazy. And maybe that wouldn't be the first place to do it, but wouldn't that be fun to be able to do something like that? Like a multi-day, not even a race, just a fun camp almost.
Adventure. Yeah. That sounds pretty cool. And we actually talked with one of the co-founders of Vivo Barefoot, and he did a similar thing over in in the UK, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm. Where it was like a swim run experience.
Like a swim run experience where they were doing a couple day kind of a little adventure. Mm-hmm. And they had these little tow behinds, like a little mattress blow up that you could put your shoes on, that you would actually kind of change into a wetsuit and do a long swim. And then you had all your stuff in a dry bag and you can kind of change for these kind of longer adventures like that.
Yeah, so, and then it like turns into a backpack. It's like, it's I think cool. That's probably like the equipment that you would need if you wanted to do one of these like through swim runs where it's like keep everything dry, can run with it, can, you know, it floats.
Or you could do Jonas Kolting style and do a 300K swim.
Yeah, just straight.
You know, just no big,
he's
no big
a beast,
deal.
Man, I love talking to him. Man, he was one of my favorite interviews that weekend.
Yeah, you know what? Same for us.
It was a larger than life experience. We invited him to our hotel, which there was this little balcony, which is, you know, perfect for recording a podcast. And he walks up and he looks like some sort of movie star. He's so tan. He's got these like aviator sunglasses. His hair's
like a super deep V.
Yeah, slick back hair. I'm like, this looks like the Swedish Tom Cruise right here. And he just sits down and like just basically dumps a history lesson on us about swim run. I was just like, this is the coolest thing ever.
Swedes are so cool. Yeah. I mean, I could see why they chose what they're doing like as a government with the pandemic, because they know they're so cool that they probably assume they're too cool to get COVID.
It almost is like a little bit of cockiness, but I don't actually think that it is.
No,
but I see how
much
people
nicer
could interpret
than that.
It as cockiness.
They're like kind, so it's not cocky.
Yeah. They're just genuine. Yeah. And everyone that we've talked to has been the most down to earth, humble person in the world.
Yeah, they're also like from another planet.
Yeah, they could also be like aliens. It's true.
Yeah, I mean they're just a different species of human or something. They're just amazing athletes and
The Adam released an article about the Otolo Catalina swim run experience that he did and featured. We were lucky enough to get a nice mention in there. Yeah. And
lucky in the sense that it gave us a lot of cover with our wives, because we sort of proved it's like, see, this
isn't for nothing.
So thank you for that. You definitely extended like the life of the show for at least a year.
Fantastic. I'm happy to hear that.
And so you have your website, but where are the kind of regular places that people can find out, or what's your next kind of project you're working on? I know you've been sitting in on the Rich Roll podcast for the last couple ones. You've kind of been doing like an AMA, Ask Me Anything type style on the Rich Roll podcast.
Officially coattailing on the Rich Roll podcast. I appear twice a month in the AMA format, where it's kind of Rich's forum, as opposed to where he usually interviews guests or often experts in their field and kind of gets the best out of them. He's now doing twice a month, kind of checking in on more topics, kind of current topics of the day, and answering questions from listeners. And so I'm helping him do that. I'm kind of teeing him up and kind of going through the topics with him, and that's been a pleasure. So I'm doing that. I just finished a manuscript for a book that nobody asked me to write, so I've got some revisions to do before I share it with anybody that could possibly buy it. So there's still a lot of work ahead, but I've been doing that. And to see my work, it's real easy. It's just adamskolnick.com and Instagram and Twitter at adamskolnick.
Cool. We'll link to all that in the show
notes. That'll all be in the show notes. And I really enjoyed your spot on Rich's podcast. I heard the most recent one there with some of the Black Lives Matter stuff and the protest and all that. And I think that you bring in really good insights, and obviously you're very knowledgeable person as well, so that's helpful.
Thank you, man. Thank you. That was the first one, and that was it's an important time right now, so it was a pleasure to be able to kind of get in there and contribute in some small way. So thank you.
Great.
Well, cool. Well, I think with that, thank you so much for being on the show, taking time out of your day. Best of luck with a forthcoming family expansion, and if we don't see you before then, see you in Catalina.
See you soon. Somewhere in the world. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you guys a lot. You make me laugh every day.
Thanks, Adam.
Thank you for listening to the Low Tide Boys, a swim run podcast.
Make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast and leave a review on iTunes if you're so inclined.
You can also sign up for our newsletter at lowtideboys.com. That's boys with a Z. And check out our meme page at The Low Tide Boys on Instagram. If you have any questions or suggestions for the show, drop us an email at lowtideboys@gmail.com.
We'd like to thank Writing Easy Records for our show music, and of course our wives for their support and tolerance of our swim run activities, hobbies, and other bullshit we do.
Finally, you can support our efforts on Patreon. Until next time, get out there and go for a swim.
And then a run.
And then another swim.
Then another run.
And then another swim.
And then run to the finish line. And just keep going until you're done.
Yes.
Or until run you to cross the finish line.
Or run to the car.
Or run to your car.
Somewhere. Just keep running.